From the Mutual Broadcasting System, this is STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. Now, retired Marine Intelligence Officer and globally recognized risk expert, Hal Kempfer.
Welcome to STRAT. And today, I'm going to talk about something that just happened not too long ago. About this big attack in New York City, Park Avenue. The perpetrator was a surveillance operative, private investigator from Las Vegas, former high school football star. And the building that he attacked actually holds a number of places, but apparently he was attacking the headquarters of the NFL. Didn't get to the headquarters section of that building. Actually went to another place. But let's just talk about this. All right, because I think there's a lot of lessons that can be learned from this. I should tell you up front, and some of you may know this, that I've actually been doing training on terrorism and dealing with a variety of different threats to include active shooters in Las Vegas for a number of years. I've actually produced and appeared in a whole video series that was done for Las Vegas Metro and the Southern Nevada Counterterrorism Center. Some years back, dealing with a variety of different threats, criminal and terrorism. So obviously, when I saw this, it's got my attention. And of course, I was on the air talking about it as well. But the perpetrator's name, Shane Tamura, age 27, from the Los Angeles area. He had actually played football at a couple of high schools in Los Angeles. His teammates spoke very highly of him. They were all, from what I can see, all of them were very surprised. To see something like this happen. He was living in Las Vegas, and he failed to show up to his job as basically working casino resort security. My understanding is he was a surveillance operative. He worked surveillance. That's why he had a private investigator's license, was because of that job. And all of a sudden, the reason he didn't show up was because he had picked up and he was traveling across the country going to New York City and obviously engaged on this deadly rampage against the NFL headquarters. Now, his car was spotted going through Colorado on Saturday, Nebraska, and Iowa on Sunday. And then he was in New Jersey, Columbia, New Jersey, across the water from New York at 4:24 p.m. And then he drove into Manhattan shortly thereafter. I don't know if you really understood driving into Manhattan, traffic in the afternoon. That's a whole other issue. And so he drives in there Monday afternoon. Obviously, a lot of traffic he's got to contend with. And he basically, drove up to this place at 345 Park Avenue in Manhattan. Very huge building. Actually, good security around there, generally speaking. They hired off-duty New York Police Department officers as a part of a program they have back there where you can hire them to provide security at your facility or your building. And he got out of his car. And I think the reports, as I recall, the reports of a shooting started coming in around 6:28. He was seen getting out of his BMW carrying an AR rifle. It's an Armalite, but normally called an assault rifle. Very similar to an M4 if you have a military background. But obviously, from everything I've heard, semi-automatic, not fully automatic. And then he walked deliberately, quickly, right towards the skyscraper. Now, everybody's kind of surprised that nobody stopped him or did something. And if you look at the way he carried the weapon, he carried it down on his side, down by his legs. And honestly, from a distance, it may not have stood out because it didn't look like, if you weren't really paying attention or whatever, and he walked with such a purposeful stride, I could see where a lot of people would have glanced his direction and then just not really thought anything of it because his legs and his torso and his arms would have masked the weapon from a distance if you weren't looking specifically at it. And because he looked like he knew where he was going and didn't slow down, it's usually when people stop, pause, look around, it draws attention. If they look like they know where they're going, a lot of times people just don't really pay much attention. So anyway, he did walk very purposefully right into the building. And then he started his carnage, which killed four people, tragically killed a NYPD officer that was working security there. And then he just started shooting up the place until he got to an elevator where he was trying to get to the NFL headquarters. It just so happened that when he shot the officer, he managed that there was a NFL employee, I don't think he had any idea, that was hit in that same, you know, basically fuselage of rounds that went that direction. And he ended up wounding the NFL employee, but I don't think he had any idea that that person was an NFL employee. Then he made his way to the headquarters, I believe he, oh, and he shot a security guard there too. And then he made his way to the elevator bank. A woman came out of an elevator. For whatever reason, he let her pass. Didn't take her under fire. And honestly, this kind of goes to this assessment. This is very purposeful. That was at the time when the news was coming in. That was my assessment looking at what I was hearing, was he appeared to have a target in mind or a target area in mind. Got into the headquarters and went to the 33rd floor. The 33rd floor is not where the NFL is. The 33rd floor is where the building owner, Rudin Properties, that's where their offices are located. And he went through the store firing as he traveled. One woman was shot and killed who worked in that area. And it appears from what we can tell, he just got on the wrong elevator. You gotta remember, he's rolling in there at 6:30 at night. It's after hours. I'm sure the elevators were restricted and you couldn't just walk in and go up there. And for whatever reason, he got on the elevators that went to the 33rd floor. And so when I think at some point he realized what he did, and they proceeded down the hallway and basically shot himself and killed himself, committed suicide. Now, the suspect had, from what we can tell, some sort of documented mental health issues. At least that's what New York authorities said at the time, and that's what seems to have come out since. You know, he reportedly authorities in Las Vegas, and I'm not sure who those authorities were. Could have been Las Vegas Metro had made some checks on him or something, but it's not quite clear. More will come out about this, but they apparently had some interface with him, and they knew that he had some issues. And there was a report that I'm still trying to figure out that said that 2 weeks ago that authorities in Las Vegas, again, I'm not quite sure what that means, said that they knew he was coming to New York. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of questions about what happened with that information. Did they tell anybody in New York about it? But then again, also with these things, what happened in these encounters? Was it enough to trigger what was going on? That I don't know, but it appears that there was some knowledge that he had mental health issues and that he was going to New York at some time, and that was known in Las Vegas, and nothing got transitioned over there. Now, I mentioned he was a high school football star. There's no indication that he played in the NFL. There's no indication that he played college football or at least serious college football. But one thing I would mention, all right, is that the NFL being the NFL, he had apparently seen a CNN documentary that talked about CTE injuries, which is a common injury we see with tackle football. And it's a brain injury, and it causes all sorts of problems, and it's been very well documented. You don't need to go into all the details here. But there have been a number of people who have kind of self-diagnosed themselves, and many of them were younger, and they, I say younger, like in their 20s, 30s. And of those, and you really can't tell for sure. They can't get a Sadly, they can't get a clear diagnosis on this, or at least they haven't been, until the person dies and they actually do an autopsy and they go in and look at their brain. So he left a note and he said, look at my, basically in so many words, look at his brain after he was dead. And hopefully that is what they're doing, is looking at his brain. But I think when you look at this, it probably was that in his view, whatever issues he was having in life, could have been a result of what he had self-diagnosed as CTE. And I heard an interesting statement on CNN that of those younger people who had, or people under 30 who had diagnosed themselves, it was found about 40% were actually correct. They did have CTE. So it was a fairly high percentage. So it may turn out that it was the problem he had. But, you know, he left this carnage in his wake. This was a very busy weekend in Reno, also from Nevada, or in this case in Nevada. There was also a shooting that had taken place up there. And so it seemed like it was a busy weekend for shootings across the board, and it got, obviously, attention. A couple things really come to mind, immediately on this. First question I have is, when did we, and by we I mean collectively, when did his workplace, any authorities, whether they're mental health, law enforcement, whatever, when did we know that he may be a threat to himself or others? Or did we have that clearly delineated? And if we knew there were mental health issues, were there actions taken to, for example, separate him from any weapons he might own? He had a permit, a concealed carry permit for a pistol in the state of Nevada. He was carrying an AR-15. And so obviously I have some questions in there. You know, in California, for example, we have a thing called 5150, which is if somebody exhibits some sort of mental illness, if you will, that that they pose a threat to themselves or others, that they can immediately go in, search, seize, and hold all their weapons until sometime in the future. But they have to go through a whole process to get those weapons back. They have to kind of prove that they're mentally capable of getting those weapons back. So I'm kind of wondering what happened in that regard in Nevada. And then if they knew all these other things and they knew he was going to New York City, did they tell anybody what was done to mitigate that thing? You know, I've kind of mentioned my background in training with this, obviously, and I do a lot of training in a variety of different places, done all over the country, in a larger sense, all over the world, dealing with issues that deal with threats from whether it's active shooters, bombers, whatever, terrorists, violent extremists. And I should mention that in this case, he does kind of fall into that definition. Now, I'm sure there will be those from the FBI and others go, oh, it's mental illness, it wasn't terrorism, it wasn't all this stuff. Here's the issue that I kind of look at. All right, first off, we've come to kind of expect things like this to happen for a bona fide terrorist, and we focus on this, and if they say, you know, if they say some allegiance to ISIS or something like that, we immediately jump in, oh, it's a terrorist right away. But he was attacking a definition. I mean, he was attacking a definition. He was attacking an institution that was, by the definition, an institution that had a political or social objective. He was attacking the NFL. He was attacking the NFL because of what he felt they had done wrongly as a policy thing, a position they had taken involving CTE. So whether he was stable, mentally ill, whatever, he had a social or political objective, if you will, a reason why he was doing that, regardless of whatever was wrong with him mentally. He did state that. So it's a threat of violence for political purposes. That sounds very much like the FBI definition. But the FBI definition defines terrorism as the unlawful use of force or violence against persons or property to intimidate or coerce a government, the civilian population, or any segment thereof in the furtherance of political or social objective. That kind of sounds like what he was trying to do. So I'm going to say right up front, yeah, it's very domestic. He's not tied to some international terrorist group. He's not tied to any large terrorist movement that I'm aware of. We don't have great laws that define domestic terrorism. We don't have great laws that define things like single-issue domestic terrorism. But he definitely seemed to fall into that, all right? And I kind of wonder, was anybody really looking at this from that perspective? And if not, why aren't we looking at this? Because we're seeing too many of these types of attacks happen from individuals with very localized motives. If you go to, you know, go back to Thousand Oaks, to the Borderline Club and Grill, that attack was from someone who had a visceral hatred of college students. And it was not called terrorism, although I would say if you have a visceral, broad statement or broad hatred of college students, and that is the reason why you went to that particular bar, was to shoot up college students because of that, well, that's a political or social objective. I mean, you're trying to make a statement, if you will, against that. So I would say you need to look at this category here a lot closer. And I think we need to be using the full stuff that was put in place after 9/11 to look at this sort of stuff. And I've been saying this for many years, and I've gotten a lot of pushback, and I've even heard FBI special agents misdefine their own definition of terrorism, saying, well, they're not, it's not like you belong to a foreign, it's like you do not have to be a card-carrying member in good standing of an international terrorist organization to be a terrorist. All right, there is a broad definition. Doesn't necessarily mean we can prosecute them as a terrorist per se under current law, because we don't have a domestic terrorist law that does this. But it's not like that old TV show 24 with Kiefer Sutherland running around all over the place, chasing down these incredibly sophisticated terrorists. A lot of times these are very unsophisticated terrorists. A lot of times these folks that commit terrorist acts, these acts of mass violence, are individuals that do have serious social, emotional, mental problems associated with the violence they're doing. And we kind of have this unrealistic expectation of what defines a terrorist. The other thing is, see something, say something. Great idea. But the other thing is, you can see something and have no idea what it is. In this case, people saw something and they didn't even register the fact the guy's walking into a building with an AR-15. People, if you want to do this well, people have to understand what they're observing. And I'm thinking in that case, they just want to look close enough at somebody walking in with an assault rifle. But in a lot of cases where people are exhibiting signs of instability where they would pose a threat to themselves or others, too many people don't recognize the seriousness. And of course, some of those around them, it's such a gradual thing that builds up over time. They may not realize that it's kind of crossed the line, if you will. So some kind of miss it, if you will. But part of it is making people aware of what this is. And I think that's another area where we could go far. It wouldn't cost a lot of money. We don't have to hire a ton of people. But it would go very far if we were just to make a lot of people more aware of what signs, what indicators, what suspicious activity to look for, and then make sure they really understand how to report it across the board. And again, I've spent many, many years of my life training private sector, public safety, all sorts of folks, non-governmental organizations, others, in how to do this stuff. So I'm saying, and I'm not saying, quick, hire help, go out and do this. What I am saying is that we just need to do this on a much broader level to make people more aware. Louis Pasteur, the famous scientist of pasteurization, he's the guy who came up with that, had a famous saying that chance favors a prepared mind. We need to prepare more minds to be able to spot this stuff. We need to be prepared to do this. And also, we need to realize that we need to remove some of these obstacles. They're in the way of broader awareness, many of them very bureaucratic in nature, because there's some tragic results. We need to take a look at our Homeland Security process. What the eye have seen certainly over the last 15 plus 20 years, if you will, is as DHS grew as a bureaucracy, they would hire more folks, and they hired a ton of folks. I'm not commenting on what's happening with federal government employees being laid off or whatever, but I am saying, I saw them taking stuff on, and then they create these what eventually became bureaucratic obstacles to going out there and doing this stuff, or in some cases, putting out stuff that was not very good or not very effective from the government. But in doing that, it kind of knocked out everybody else. And they go, well, I'm not going to do that because FEMA does that, or I'm not going to do that because DHS does that. And so it created this false expectation of reliance on this government thing to come in and do something when local governments, private sector, private companies need to be more self-reliant, doing it themselves and take more responsibility on making sure that they are also prepared. So I think we need to take a hard look at that, because obviously what happened in New York was a failure. And if we don't recognize what happened in New York as a failure, it wasn't something where he killed hundreds of people or something. It wasn't something on the magnitude of the Route 91 concert in Las Vegas. That was obviously a lot, lot bigger. But we have to look at these things and we have to learn from them. And we need to recognize, and we need a lot of people to be recognized. Look, you do not have to be, Jack Bauer in 24 to recognize what a terrorist is. Anybody can be easily trained, and it doesn't have to be in person. It can be virtually. It can be done through PSA. It can be a lot of things. But a lot of people can elevate their expectation. And the reality of countering terrorism is it's not your FBI special agents, and it's not your, those who are heavily trained in counterterrorism that normally see the suspicious activity. Usually somebody out there who knows a little bit more than average sees something and they go, that's kind of strange. And then they get into the system and it's getting into the system, that media recognition within the system, that this is something that needs to be followed up on. That's how we prevent acts of terrorism, however you care to defend terrorism. And I am just saying that what we saw in New York, though I know there will be a lot of people at NYPD and the mayor of New York and the FBI said, oh, this was not an act of terrorism. I would say go back and look at your broad definition of terrorism and look at what the guy was trying to do. And if you're not saying it's terrorism, you know, I kind of go back to that thing I've always heard. You know, you have some horrible shooting or a horrible event happen, and sometimes the police chief will get up there and say, there's nothing we can do to stop this. And I would say that is the wrong message to send to the public. If you're the head of public safety, and you're saying you can do nothing to keep the public safe from this, I don't know that that really is something you want to hang your hat on as far as a statement. What we should be doing is looking at what we are doing, figuring out how to leverage our resources better to prevent something like this from happening in the future. So anyway, that's my analysis, that's my assessment on this. This is my background is kind of out there on this as well. And I think we really need to learn from what happened in New York and start taking those lessons and taking those lessons to heart so we don't have something like that happen in the future. And New York is not an isolated case. Thanks for listening to Strat. Also, please visit stratpodcast.com. You can also go to my YouTube channel, Hal Kemper TV, or you can go to my website, gripsa.com. And hope you enjoyed this. Hope you found some value in this. And I hope you listen to follow along Strat Podcast.